Welcome to Indie Radio Garden, this week's highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
The first clip comes from 95.3 FM, WHGE-LP, Afro-American Historical Society of Delaware. From the show, East Side Pride, Rochelle Wilson interviews Patrice Gibbs on his family history concerning the East Side neighborhood of Wilmington, Delaware.
Of the East Side Pride. And you're here to tell us a little bit about your family history and your connection to the East Side. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your family.
Okay, let's start with my grandmother's father, my great-grandfather. My great-grandfather was named Howard Cooper. And he was born in, he was born downstate. And he moved to the East Side in the early 1900s. He had to leave from downstate. You got to consider the times. It was, you know, the early 1900s when he left. He was too strong to stay downstate. His family was afraid that white supremacists would kill him because he would not back down. And when he moved up here, up to Wilmington from downstate, when he moved to Wilmington, wasn't long after he moved to Wilmington, he found out about Marcus Garvey. And he joined the United Negro Improvement Association.
United Negro Improvement Association. Yes. UNIA.
UNIA.
Yep, Marcus Garvey.
He was a charter member here. He was the General Secretary of the Wilmington faction of the UNIA. He was very significant. The UNIA, Marcus Garvey, founded the shipping line, the Black Star.
Yes, because that ship was going to take us all back home, right?
Yes,
to Libya,
right.
Liberia.
Right.
And
right.
Then the ship broke down, unfortunately, right? Like, how did that just so coincidentally happen?
Well, it was by no means a coincidence. And, of course, part of the purpose of the Black Star Line was not only to take us back to Africa, but to do business with Africans.
Yes.
That was part of Marcus Garvey's dream. And, of course, as now, then the best place to file corporation papers was in Delaware.
Absolutely.
Well, it was my great-grandfather that filed the papers for Marcus Garvey to incorporate the Black Star Line here in Delaware.
And Wilmington has not long ago, I believe it was just last year, Mayor Przycki announced that Wilmington is now called Garvey City. And so that's got to be some honor in there, too.
Oh, yeah.
And
most definitely.
That's pretty special.
Most definitely. You know, a lot of people, unfortunately, don't know a lot or enough about Marcus Garvey and that, one, he had the largest ever organization, black organization, in the history of black America. He influenced everyone that came after, from Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., Adam Clayton Powell. All of these well-known leaders were influenced by Marcus Garvey.
That's just amazing. And to think that your grandfather,
great-grandfather
mm-hmm. was a part of that, knew that, lived that. It was it was coursing through his veins.
Mm-hmm.
And so then let's fast forward. So he did some amazing things, and then what happened?
Well, his wife died young. Okay. His wife died while his daughters were still children. My grandmother was 9 years old. Her younger sister was 6 years old. Now here he was, a single father, with the help of his stepdaughter, raised his daughters to be very proud, very militant black women. And that they were.
Okay.
Yes, that they were.
So what are some of the militant things, the actions that they took?
Okay.
How were they militant?
Okay, let me tell you. One afternoon, I was about 12 years old, they decided they wanted to go out for an afternoon outing.
Yes.
So
that's nice.
They put on their fancy hat and their gloves, and they did not want to ride the bus like that. So they called a taxi. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the taxi came, the driver was white. And when he saw these two dark-skinned women in the back of his cab.
Oh, he let them get in.
Oh, yeah, he let them get in. But when he looked back and saw them and realized, he said, all N-words.
So wait a minute. He pulls up, he mm-hmm. sees the people, he have to see them to get into the car.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that he did not know they were melanated women prior to allowing them in his vehicle?
That's a very good question, because the neighborhood that he picked them up in was a black neighborhood.
Okay.
Actually, it was mixed, but it was predominantly a black neighborhood.
So that should have been red flags right there.
Right there. That should have informed him right there who he was picking up.
So now he's got these two strong women mm-hmm. in his car.
Mm-hmm.
By whatever happenstance, he didn't know. Now he realizes that they're black women,
yeah,
right?
Right. And he calls them the N-word.
Oh, boy.
Well, they didn't go for that.
Go for that
no,
very
no,
well.
No, that did not set well with them.
Of course not.
So they cussed him out. Got out of the taxi, called the taxi cab company, and told them what happened, and that they demanded an apology, and that this driver be fired. You know, and whoever answered the phone didn't take it seriously and hung up. So they personally went to the dispatcher's office and told him, look, we're not going to be treated like that. We're not going to be disrespected like that, and we're not having that in our community. We want an apology, and we want this man fired. And very flippantly, the manager said, okay, I'm sorry, bye, get out of my office.
Hmm.
Well, he did not know who he was dealing with.
Apparently not. You
well,
gotta behave well.
It didn't end with their visit to the office.
Okay,
it did not end there. They were not satisfied with the apology, and the driver was not fired.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my grandmother, Dorothy Cooper, and her sister, Janet, were what was known as village queens.
Oh, my.
Who garnered a lot of respect because of their knowledge of our history.
Yes.
We're talking the early 70s. And because of their courageous stance against racism. Okay. Well, what they did was they informed the young men. Oh, before they left the taxi manager's office, they told him there will be no taxis allowed west of Broome Street.
Here in Wilmington.
Here in Wilmington. And he laughed at that. So when they got back, they were former Eastsiders who moved to the west side. When they got back to their neighborhood, they informed the young men in the neighborhood that they did not want to see any taxis west of Broome Street. So what happened was, when a taxi did come west of Broome Street, but they did stipulate they don't want any drivers hurt.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
But when a taxi did come west of Broome Street, out of nowhere came hordes of young black men, and they destroyed the taxi. And this happened every time a taxi came west of Broome Street.
They were and queen of the village.
That's right.
That's
who garnered
wonderful.
A lot of respect from
yes.
the young men in the village. Eventually, the taxi company figured out, you know, they were responsible because they had issued the warning, and they brought a police officer to my grandmother and Aunt Janet's house. Now, my grandmother and Aunt Janet would sit on the porch, and young men would come by, and what they did was, all summer, there was always a cooler on the porch. And anybody in the neighborhood or in the community could come up on the porch and get a drink.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And when they would, my grandmother and aunt would talk to them.
Yes.
which is why they had garnered so much respect.
Yes.
So when this taxi cab manager and this police officer showed up, the police officer knew who my grandmother and I were.
Okay.
Okay. And he asked the taxi manager, what did he want? What did he want? Tag. And he said, well, I want those two old black women arrested.
Uh-huh.
And you know, those two old colored women. I think mm-hmm. that's what he said.
Probably.
And the police officer said, well, what proof do you have that they're responsible for this?
White officer, of
White
course.
Officer.
Yeah.
You know, and he asked my grandmother, one of the white officers asked my grandmother, Miss Cooper, did you have anything to do with the taxis getting destroyed and demolished when they came past Broome Street? And my grandmother said, honey, I'm 60 years old. What are you talking about? he told the manager, hey, I have no proof that that's what happened. And said, well, I want them arrested. And the cop looked around and he saw a group of young brothers over on the corner. And he told the taxi cab manager, if we arrest these women, those young black men are going to be a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So he said, what I suggest is that you reach some accommodation with these ladies and settle this yourself.
I suggest.
Yeah.
I strongly encourage you to reach a settlement.
Yeah. So, and the police officers left.
Yeah.
And left him there. And
wow, that had to be scary for him.
And he looked around and he saw those young black men. And yes, he did get nervous. And my grandmother said, you're fine unless we say otherwise.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that. That is like so much. That's the common unity, the community, common mm-hmm. unity, community.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know where we've lost so much of that, Pat. But now it seems we haven't given them any purpose.
No.
We don't honor them as warriors, because that's really, they're coming into their rites of passage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, they're coming into that.
Right.
But they have no guidance, no leadership of what they should do.
That didn't happen by happenstance.
Well, the elders took them under their wing with the cooler on mm-hmm. the porch,
yes.
and God knows what else they did for
them. Yeah. Oh,
probably
yeah.
fed them and mm-hmm. did all kinds of
all
things.
All kinds of things. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There were always, whenever we had barbecues or anything, there were always, you know, plenty of young people there.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And my grandmother and her younger sister, they were treated like the village queens that they were.
Yes.
Because they were held in high esteem.
Yes. Yeah. And that was right here. Where was that here?
Well, that took place actually on the hilltop. But you
okay.
know, they brought that East Side pride and attitude with them when they moved to the West Side of the world.
Because they originated from
the
East Side.
They originated from the East Side. Yeah.
East Side pride, the history and the rich presence of what the East Side of Wilmington has to offer you today and what it offered us yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So today's guest is, of course, Pat Gibbs, mm-hmm. one of the journalists for WHGE, and he's giving us a history lesson about his family and his connection to the East Side.
Yeah. Well,
I admire these two women.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, what happened, they told the manager that one, they wanted that taxi cab driver fired.
Yes.
And the manager responded, well, yeah, he has a family. Well, he should have thought about that before he called us the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know?
Yeah.
And he said, and they also said, we want you to do something for us that shows that you are sincere in your apology.
Okay.
And he said, well, I have no idea what I could do. She said, well, you better think about it, because here's the thing. Until we say otherwise, there will be no taxis on the street in Wilmington. And that's when he came up with the idea of giving them a free ride and driver to accommodate them for 1 month. And that's how, the other demand was that there be black drivers.
Ooh, that's a good one. Give black folks a job.
Right. Now, they have black drivers.
But, okay. I mean, to integrate them all the way in.
But the thing was, the black drivers weren't put on during the hours that were most lucrative.
Mm.
They weren't allowed at the train station.
Mm.
You know, they weren't put on. So that changed because of my grandmother and my aunt. black drivers have the opportunity to earn a better.
You know, it's so interesting. You know, we can call off names like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X mm-hmm. and Imhotep and Robert Boise Lowry. We can call off these names because these people have been acknowledged mm-hmm. for the greatness and the achievements of their work. Mm-hmm. But people like your grandmother mm-hmm. and great-grand, you know, and these people and so many other right. advocates, activists mm-hmm. who go unnamed mm-hmm. because we didn't do something as big as, you know, we didn't lead a march over the Pettus Bridge, right? So right. we're not Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. But yet we still did something very important mm-hmm. and we simply were not recognized. Right.
The second audio comes from WRLG LP 92.9 FM, Germantown Life Enrichment Center. Station manager Connie Belay reads some of her poetry on Germantown.
Germantown Poems by Connie Belay. The memory of waters. You do not know the Monashone or the Winglehocken that flow beneath your feet, but you know the flooded intersection where your car died. You know the stink in your basement and the ruined appliance, next to the moldy box where Big Mama's photos are all stuck together with your memories of a sunny childhood in Carolina, where a giggling brook ran faster than you could. There are no happy waters here. These streams were mastered, then entombed. They were bent to serve the factory water wheel that pulled your family off the farm, then choked and stuffed inside enormous pipes. Out of sight, they will not rest out of mind. Nice town. Rough men with lunch buckets and beer bellies. Whitman men. I heard they lived here for a while. Then they tossed their beer cans and told the missus to pack the car. There was a better place down the highway, a front lawn, a driveway, another factory job in Paradise, PA. My train passes by those jobs they left, those bars and bedrooms, front porches, corner stores and tavern tales, all gone. Those men, those toothless factories. In the 20th century, they say, they won the war to end all wars. Tenochtitlan, Tikal, or Timbuktu? Where am I now? Starlings, for John Phillips, who once lived in Germantown and made wonderful sculpture. I think you are starlings. Each evening in summer on my way home, as I turn the corner, I am washed by a ruckus, a party, a riot in a towering hedgerow, where your mob of quick wings flit in and out, chattering and squabbling. I am so happy for you that your improbable home survives, your sanctuary in this crazy quilt of a blissfully neglected corner of this tottering community of broken sidewalks and diminished lives. Even in November, I can hear you when I turn that corner. You give me hope. Truth for young Julian. On a walk in the valley, you tell me that you figured out Santa was not real. He's like the Easter Bunny. It's really mommy, isn't it? We reach the first stepping stone across the creek. Hold my hand. It's slippery. The water is cold, and he is unafraid. Stories are more true than truth, I say.
In the third audio, Scrap Radio Workshop on the Creation of Radio Content with Gender Perspective, our participant, Caitlin Sieri, delivers her homework with an audio drama called The Breakfast Game, about the old traditional habits of some women making the whole family wait to feed themselves until the head of the household, the man, eats.
The Breakfast Game, a Cartesian theater production. With Giacomo Bonella as Emily, Sue Phillips as Lucia, Issa Kabir as Tom, and Andrea Mazzucchi as Gino. Written and produced by Caitlin Sieri.
Morning. Hope I didn't keep you waiting too long.
Oh, not at all, Emily. Breakfast is still warm.
I know. Oh, the smell woke me right up.
Aspetta, not yet. Your husband's not up.
Of course. Duh. You need all the guests up before you can start eating. I'll go give Tom a shove.
No, don't get up. I can wait until Tom wakes up on his own.
No, you can't. Tom will sleep until noon if you let him.
No, please. You had a long trip. He needs his sleep.
Lucia, the minute Tom smells that authentic Italian frittata of yours, it'll be like he just had 12 shots of espresso.
Gino sarà così arrabbiato.
Wait, Gino? This is about your husband?
You read the guidebooks, haven't you? In traditional Italian cultures, the male guest is served first. Then the male head of the house, then the guest's kids, then the female guest, then our kids, then me.
Lucia, this is the 21st century. Serving the man first died with our grandparents.
Good manners are timeless.
This isn't good manners. This is misogyny.
You don't see me insulting your culture. Like that time you wore socks and sandals during the passeggiata.
That was one time.
Lucia? Em? What's going on here? Is that a frittata?
Fresh from the pan. We were just waiting for you and—
Good. I'm starving.
Pasta, stop!
What did I do?
She says we can't eat until her husband comes in.
Really? I thought that died with our grandparents.
That's what I'm saying!
No. Like any host from any decade would do. Just because you think you're too good to cook for guests.
Too good to cook for guests?
You served us those horrendo toaster tarts when we came to visit.
Hey, wild berry Pop-Tarts are an American delicacy. We were sharing our cultural heritage.
Well, I don't want your heritage, and you sure as heck don't want mine.
That's not what this is about.
Oh, Lord, I've had such a long time.
What you don't understand is we're just hungry.
Dio Santo, what's with all the shouting?
Oh, Gino, breakfast is ready.
Oh, I'm not hungry.
You're not hungry?
I got one of those deliciosi American Frutti di Bosco Pop-Tarts before I started gardening.
I told you they were a delicacy.
Did you at least toast it?
Nah, too much effort.
So would it be okay if Tom and Lucia and I ate breakfast without you? I mean, she was waiting for you to take your first bite.
Lucia, why didn't you say something?
You were gardening. We couldn't start without you.
Lucia, ti prego, you don't need my permission to eat. This is the 21st century. What are you all standing around like scemi for? Mangia, mangia. Buon appetito.
Thanks for joining us. My name's Joanna Wykander, and I'm the program director at 92.9 FM WGGT LP G-Town Radio. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio Project production.